Dr. Jim Wilder. He has been a Christian counselor since 1977. Today, Jim Wilder is the executive director of the Shepherd's House, and the Shepherd's House specializes in trauma and addiction recovery. And just to tease you a little bit, Dr. Wilder has, I don't want to say stumbled upon, but has come up with, has recognized, has acknowledged, has discovered, whatever the appropriate term is, a way to actually minister to people that is wildly effective. And it's biblical. The traditional way of dealing with someone that has gone through a trauma is to help them go back and revisit that traumatic experience. And of course, and then, you know, ask where was Jesus in that, if it's Christian counseling kind of thing. And you're going back to that troublesome event, that troublesome experience. And there's a lot of stuff that's involved. Can I just tell you that Dr. Wilder and the Shepherd's House and the Thrive Model or the Life Model, and there's all these wonderful websites and resources, they do it in a different way. Yes, you would you deal with your hurts and your traumas and your pain, but you do it from a point of joy. Now, that's fascinating to me. And it's also, interestingly, how God has wired us. So with that as an intro, Dr. Jim Wilder, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to be with you here today.
All right, so did I totally botch it? Am I close?
You're good, yeah.
Pretty close?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay, so it starts with joy, though, because I remember one of the last times I had you on, and we were talking about how everything reduces down, your relationship sensors and all this stuff are firing, and you're responsive and open if you're coming from a place of joy and bonding. Lay that out again so people have a foundation.
Well, your brain is built to design, basically to amplify something. And it's not a linear device. It just doesn't sit there. It picks up what's important in the environment around you and makes a big deal out of it. So you've got two ways you can go. You can either make a big deal out of all your problems and the things that make you upset, or you can really amplify the feeling that I'm glad to be together. And that feeling that I'm glad to be together is what we're talking about with joy. You know, joy basically is that how people's eyes light up to see you, and then you start smiling at me, and I start smiling at you, and then pretty soon, like, this is a big smile going on. That's what joy is about, and it's an amplifying of the actual delight in being together.
Now, there was a moment that just happened. We're babysitting my grandson last night. He'll be turning 3 in June. And when he saw me yesterday, we met at lunch, and it was like a handoff from the grandparents saying, he lit up. That, Jim, that warmed my heart like there's nothing else. To get an involuntary grin and a big smile from your grandson is just precious. That's what you're talking
about.
That's
the stuff of life. You know, we live for that kind of experience. And in fact, we're wired for a bunch of different emotions, probably about 6 unpleasant ones and 1 really positive one, which is the joy emotion. It's the first thing that babies start looking for. You know, they're looking for who's going to be smiling at them. And, you know, no matter how old you get, you're still looking for that experience. Who's going to be smiling at me? That as we walk into a room, we look for that smile. It's the thing that catches our attention. If we notice somebody anywhere is sort of smiling at us, we're just so attracted to that. It's irresistible. It's the number one urge of the human mind. And it's the only thing we want to practice. I think that's the important thing. You know, if I could make you irritated, you wouldn't want to do that over and over again. If I could scare you, you wouldn't say, wow, scare me again. And the only thing that our brain wants to practice is joy, this smiling. And so you'll notice that babies, especially in their 9th month, will spend up to 8 hours a day practicing joy with their mothers if their mothers are available.
No, wait, stop. The way that you just rolled that off the top of your head, I want people to understand there's a boatload of research on all this stuff that you're saying regarding, like, in the 9th month and the ways in which babies look at their mothers and stuff. You've tracked all this stuff so that when you're coming out, you're not just guessing, I guess is my point.
Well, this is some of the best research science we got out there. Yeah, we're not guessing at all. A lot of this is very well established, especially in the work of Dr. Alan Shore. But the 9th month is the high point of growth of your brain. It's growing the fastest it could at any point. It's also the high point of bonding. So it's when we're forming the most relationship. And at that moment, if you could, if the baby could, they would spend up to 8 hours a day doing this joy, smile, back and forth. And they go for about 10 seconds and then they rest. And then they'll do it again over and over and over again. And it builds a really strong nervous system. Matter of fact, if you want to have the strongest brain your child possibly could have, the thing to do is to practice during that ninth month when the growing is at its optimum. And spend as much time as you can with your baby building joy then, and you're going to build this capacity across their lifetime to be able to deal with the tough things that come up in life. It's again, the only thing you want to practice, and you do it in the most delightful way by just smiling back and forth.
Okay, two obvious things. What happens to the babies who don't get that? That's one thing. And then secondly, when you're talking about how we all want to do this joy thing, maybe one of the most offensive things to people then is the flip side of that. You get the courtesy smile. You get the fake, insincere, plastic smile. And why do we find that so offensive, Jim?
Well, we'll start with that second one, easier to lay out. Right now, we've both got headsets on, and right inside our headset on the outside of our brain is the place in your brain that does the fake social smile, the smile for the camera, we call it.
Okay.
Right in the middle of your brain where everything is like, the most personal and connected is where your real genuine joy smile is from. And where although they kind of use your face to make a smile either way, one of them our brain knows is the real thing. We love that. The other part of the brain is just a social smile. And if you damage those parts of the brain, you can only do the social smile or the real smile, depending on which one
really?
Gets damaged. Yeah, they're not interchangeable.
So what happens to children now, back to the joy thing, and when we coo and oodle and tickle and gaze at our infants, especially in the ninth month, is wonderful, rich bonding time. But what about the infants, the children that don't get that, Dr. Wilder?
Well, the really sad news is that they don't develop much emotional capacity to quiet themselves, to deal with the problems that are going to be coming up in their life. In the future, they basically have pretty flimsy brains, not very well wired, not very able to deal with stresses when they happen, and they really become at risk for being low joy individuals as they grow on up. So it's probably one of the things that you'd expect to find is you'd have trouble directing your attention deficit kinds of problems, depression, all those sorts of things. Whenever I list those, I want to make sure that I'm not saying that that's the only way you can end up with those problems.
Right.
But you really increase your risk of that kind of thing. Even of the genetic kind of things that lead to addictions manifesting themselves if you don't have the joy built into your brain.
Right.
When it's growing at its best.
All right, so Jim, this is just an area I'm just fascinated by all this. If I took you to a Major League Baseball game, I would see a lot more than you see because I was a pro. When I think we've all seen children. And kindergarten class, classic example, right? And you see children acting a certain way, and you know they're not getting mothered or they're getting smothered. They're not getting the love. They're not getting the nurturing. They're not getting the attention. They just act that way, and you can tell. Now, that's from us amateurs. When you see those kids, you probably know stuff that happened in their ninth month or didn't happen in their ninth month through their whole developmental period.
Yeah, if you have a good chance to observe kids, there's a pretty good chance you can guess where in their first 3 years of life they were getting some deficits. There's a couple of alarming statistics that we'll look at in a minute, but the part of your thing your brain does is if you don't use it, it deletes part of itself later on in life. So if you don't use these joy circuits, your brain will actually go through and trim them back and leave you with even less brain capacity than you had otherwise after reaching some critical points. So it's really important early on in life to develop these. Now, one of my daughters teaches school, and she's in first grade. In first grade, she teaches all of the little kids that come in how to do joy. And it's one of their classroom assignments. They have to do joy every day as part of the class. Now, they come in, a lot of them can't do it. Some of them have autistic spectrum problems and attention problems and that. But in all the classes where she's been able to do this, the first graders, by the end of the year, the worst of them are reading at a third grade level.
They're really?
They're beginning to learn some elementary algebra. All of them could give you the brain lecture, I'm about to do it. you know, that I'm telling you here. They could explain all of this to you and even name the parts, because they practice each day as part of their environment, strengthening their joy capacity.
All right, so I'm going to stop you because I got to take a break. So when we come back, I want you to run, give us that little joy lesson that your daughter was giving the kindergarten class. And with, again, wonderful success, because I think your large theme is we are created for joy. Our best relationships are rooted in joy, not only with others, but also with God. And in that is our healing process. If you're aware of that, of tapping into that joy, healing the hurts and the pains that come in our lives can actually occur. If you short-circuit that, if you go around it and you don't come at it from a strength, joy position, then you're sort of struggling. And I think that's sort of the key that you have found out through the life model and the thrive model and all that. Quick break. We'll continue with Dr. Jim Wilder. The website, by the way, is lifemodel.org. And there's a heads up. Coming up at the end of June, there is an event at La Cañada Flint Ridge Country Club put on by Dr. Jim Wilder and the life model, featuring Dr. Dallas Willard and his wife Jane. I'll be the MC at that event. And you can go to thrivetoday.org for more information. Quick break. We'll continue with Dr. Jim Wilder. We're talking about the brain. We're talking about our relationship with God and neurotheology. I love this stuff. And the impact on, well, being loved as an infant and a child and not being loved. And the consequences coming out of that, that many of us as adults are still manifesting. Quick break. We'll continue with Dr. Wilder straight ahead. KKLA-FM Los Angeles. You guys know what the most common word in heaven is?
Oh.
And so every time I have Jim Wilder on, I have these oh experiences all over the place. And I'm so envious of his expertise. It's because I'm fascinated about this, and I don't know anything about it. But the little that I do know about it, it's wildly fascinating. And if I were a young grad student now or a college student, I would seriously consider this to be a discipline that I would want to go into and explore. What am I talking about? The best way to say it that I know of so far, as I'm getting to know Dr. Jim Wilder more closely, is he is a neurotheologian. It's taking everything you know from brain science, what happens in portions of the brain, their development, their lack of development, the experiences that they undergo in infancy, through toddlerhood, the scarring that we receive at that point, the impact it has through adolescence, the impact it has into adulthood, our coping mechanisms as adults root back into our childhood experiences. And then you add on all the biblical wisdom to it, and you put them together. And you invite Jesus into the counseling session in a real way, and you address everything from the perspective of joy. Now, I know there's a lot that I just said in that, but that's a pretty tight summary of the whole ministry of Dr. Jim Wilder. There is one website that I want to direct you to. It is joytothrive.com, and two is the number two. So it's joy2thrive.com. And Dr. Jim Wilder is a clinical psychologist, PhD at Fuller. He has been a Christian counselor since 1977. He's been the executive director of the Shepherd's House out in the Valley since 1971, specializing in trauma and addiction recovery. And there's all kinds of wonderful things that Dr. Wilder has taught and exposed and tested, and the research supporting it. And so it's just wonderful. And I just sort of, that hence the, response to a lot of what he's saying. So joytothrive.com. Jim, I want to go back to something on, what happens to the infant. You said at the ninth month, it's critical for the bonding between, especially the mother and the infant, and the ooing and the eyeing and the joy and the smile and the grinning and all that stuff. But what happens to children and infants who don't get that joy bonding, that joy reserve, that joy tank filled up?
Well, recently my dad got hit by a car. He's 98, and he broke a hip and ended up in the hospital. So he's real weak, right? So the first thing you have to do is build his strength up so he can walk, so that otherwise he's going to be knocked over by everything that comes along, because our strength is what gets us through the difficult times.
Okay.
Well, our emotions bang our brain around all over the place and get us off track of what we're doing. So basically, if you're talking about difficulty with your emotions, like staying depressed or having difficulty concentrating, attention deficit kinds of issues, whatever it is, what happens is your emotions really easily knock you off track, and then you can't get back to where you were. You joke every once in a while that you work really well here because, you know, you're used to having 30,000 people screaming at you, and it doesn't
and
knock
booing.
You. Right. And it doesn't right. knock you off track. You can handle that's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a certain degree of focus and concentration. What your brain needs in order to do that is a lot of repetitions. It's got to do something over and over and over and over again. And the only thing it really wants to do over and over again is joy. That is where you get your repetition. So when you can stay on track, whatever I'm doing while I'm feeling joy, it actually builds the same strength you're going to use to stay on track when I'm feeling upset and having all kinds of other troubles. So when you get a bunch of kids in class and they can't focus on what they're doing, mm-hmm. you need to have them practice joy and get focused again, because joy is what they're going to want to practice over and over again. If you can manage your emotions with joy, you can manage the other stuff too. It's just wired so that the same circuit does both things. So going back to your exercise with the mothers and 9-month-old babies.
Yeah.
You know, imagine this. You know, the average mother goes back to work when she's about 4 months along after the birth, something like that in America.
Okay.
Suppose that we just put all together the money that we, you know, as a family, instead of giving them a big crib or something like that, we said, we're going to pay you to just stay home. Whatever you would have earned on that 9th month, we're going to have you stay home and build the strongest brain possible for your child so that they will have the best emotional capacity. From now on, whatever goes wrong in their life, they'll be able to bounce back from that. They'll have the ability to deal with strong emotions, stay focused, stay connected with others. See, that's what happens when you get upset. You get upset with somebody, you get a strong emotion, then you forget that you got a relationship with them. You're not connected with them anymore. Mm. It's like, okay, who are you and why are you in my face? Because we lose the relationship when we get into the strong emotions. You think about every bit of trouble that happens in relationships, it's always the same thing. I get strong emotions, I forget the relationship, and then I start doing some stupid things that I shouldn't have been doing.
All right, so go slow, because I'm back in the kindergarten class for a second, though. One of the things I'll bet teachers now, as they're listening to this, and those that have been, I don't know, children's church, that have been responsible for dealing with young children, when the class gets disorderly, their experience and their instinct has been, as the teacher, get them doing something fun to, quote, win them back. If you're over-oppressive in your punishment, it probably ends up making things worse, and you as a teacher with experience have realized that. And so you have maybe defaulted into the understanding, I've got to get them working back in what Dr. Wilder would say, the joy base. And Jim, I've talked to a lot of teachers, and when they lose the class, I mean, I've even done this with my classes at Biola, where if it didn't start right, I got to get them on my team and, quote, win the audience again. And this, you're saying the same thing.
That's right. The relationship has to be reestablished, and it has to be being glad to be together. Otherwise, we don't connect, we don't follow. If you're not glad to be with me, you won't let me direct your thoughts. That's simply how the brain has worked. It expects to be connected to somebody that I like, that wants to be with me. Then I'll let you point out all kinds of other things to me. If I don't like you, I'm not going to let you direct my thoughts anywhere. So to teach you something, we have to get back to that joy. And the joy is relational. It's not just happy.
Right.
Because we can all be happy running around screaming, doing all kinds of stuff. We got chaos. Joy is really, I'm glad about you. I'm glad to be with you. I like you. There's something about connecting and being with you that really matters to me. That's what makes joy different from just being happy.
Okay, let me guess. So events make me happy, but only other people can bring me joy.
That's absolutely right. And this is, in fact, why we're getting increasing amounts of trouble with our kids right now. The problem right now is the kids are being raised by TVs, videos, stuff like that. Instead of interacting with their mothers, they go to situations, even in their own home, where they put on, you know, cute kid videos to watch. And the kids love watching it.
Right.
The only problem is it doesn't build joy strength. The joy strength only comes from interacting with somebody else who pumps me up, makes me get to a higher level of joy than I would otherwise. Otherwise, you just get a lot of excitement. So it's really, you have to have that face-to-face interaction. If it's not face-to-face, it doesn't actually work for the baby.
Okay, so this joy strength, this tank, this reserve mm-hmm. of joy starts in infancy. And it is being built up for how long? Is there sort of a cutoff point?
Well, this is the amazing thing about it. There are several built-in cutoff points. It alternates between right and left hemisphere growth. So from birth till 18 months, it's growing well. Then from 18 months to 4 years, it isn't. Then it picks up again, and it goes back and forth.
Okay.
So there are certain growth periods. Each time, though, across your life period, that when it comes around, it still is able to grow. In fact, the joy center is the only part of your brain that we know of that retains fetal biochemistry across the lifespan. That means it's always able to grow as long as you're still alive.
Oh, fascinating.
That is really... When I was at a conference where we told it, when I heard that, a bunch of neurologists stood up and applauded. It was like, that's the best news I've ever heard.
Oh, that is, no, it's awesome. So we never outgrow, nor can we exhaust our joy capacity.
Right, the ability to grow it, yes.
The ability to grow our joy, okay.
It never grows as fast as at the 9th month, though. That's like, you know, let's... Do it
peak.
While it's absolutely
okay. No,
at its best.
I got to do a break here. But the thing that, I'm struggling with the good analogy and metaphor, but I just found out I'm very susceptible to skin cancer because I have light eyes and light skin. And I've been in the sun a lot, right? And so skin cancer you get not because I just got a sunburn, you know, last weekend. It's from a lifetime of exposure to the sun.
Right.
Almost in the inverse is this joy thing. It's a lifetime of exposure to positive joy that gives you the capacity to sustain the challenges.
That's where your resilience comes
from. Right. Okay, so I got it now. So what we need most of in our relationships, especially if we're parents with our children and with our spouse and with our friends, is look for opportunities to grow that joy. And perhaps the chief source of joy is our relationship with God. When we come back, we'll find out from Dr. Jim Wilder all about that. As we continue here at the intersection of faith and reason, again, the website, joytothrive.com. That's joy, the number two, the word thrive.com, and that's your portal to access all this wonderful information. Dr. Wilder is a clinical psychologist, and he's a neurotheologian, which means take everything that we know regarding brain research, what part of the brain does what happens during its developmental cycle, if the brain endures a particular trauma at a certain point. I mean, take all the, quote, brain science and then match that with biblical wisdom. You have a neurotheologian, and that's Dr. Jim Wilder's training. Clinical psychologist by training, PhD at Fuller. He has been a Christian counselor since 1977, and you take all the brain science and all the theology blended together, and you have... Dr. Wilder's ministry. It's you got the Thrive model, you got the Life model. There's one website to go to, joytothrive.com. It's joy, the number two, thrive.com. joytothrive.com. Now check it out. Now, Jim, I got to go back to something because I misunderstood and I gave the audience a wrong impression, and I want to correct this. When you said the 9th month is the most important bonding time for an infant with his mother or father, but just the adult, and it's the bonding, it's the joy, it's the reserve. You didn't mean up through the 9th month. You meant literally like day 270 to day 300. So your best advice based upon all the brain research to Christian couples who are going to be parents and brand new parents is what?
That if you have to work and you have to be out of the home, make sure that you take that 9th month and have the most joyful member of your family stay home and smile with that baby. Just interact with them. Build the kind of strength you have. The brain just blossoms. I mean, inside, it's like the trees I've got in my backyard. You know, they blossom, and they weren't blossoming last week, and they're not going to be blossoming a month from now. This is when you got to be there if you're a bee. This is when the fruit happens. That 9th month is just spectacular. I think it's brilliant of God, actually, to have the... 9th month be the critical month for this kind of growth, because even if you're going to have another baby, you're not going to have it before 9th month. So mom has this time to just really focus in, if she's the one available, to deal with the baby and just smile, interact with them, build joy. Don't clean the house that month. You know, that's just for the baby.
Okay, so again, I want to be really specific. You go ahead and work in month 8 and month 10. But
yeah.
In from day 270 to day 300, in the 9th month, that is it's like when the fruit trees are blossoming. That's when you want to build this joy reserve tank with your infant.
Yeah, absolutely. Help get your family to to pay, help you pay your expenses for that month so you can take off from work. Your church should kick in if they want to help the babies. I mean, there's some things like that we can specifically do that really make a huge difference.
I love
difference.
That. Yeah. No, this is, again, another aha moment. All right, so let's talk about joy and the most significant relationship that we can have, and that's with God. How do they match up?
Well, I learned about joy actually from the neurology people to begin with. I mean, I grew up being a Christian, and I should have known about God and all that, but I learned from the neurology people that the brain considers joy to be the absolute most important thing that you could do as far as becoming human and having a good brain. So when I was through going to the conference, I went home and I thought to myself, I wonder if the Bible has anything to say about joy. I mean, just maybe it does. Maybe I'm not sure. And the first thing I found was in the upper room where Jesus said to his disciples in the Last Supper, he said, these things I have spoken unto you that my joy might be in you and your joy might be full. Now, what I just learned from the neurologist was that what the brain really needs is not just any kind of a joy, but a full joy, like a super-sized joy. And then I turn around and I read from Jesus' most important discourse, the reason I do my teaching is so that you would be full of joy. And not just full of it, but strong joy, powerful joy. Then he turns around, he prays to the Father, and he says, this is what I want for them, that our joy might be in them. Then you read in Acts that the kingdom of God is not about food and drink, the stuff that we think keep us alive, but about righteousness, peace, and joy in the Holy Spirit. That means when God's really there, the thing that you're going to see is joy. Then I went to the Old Testament, and here's this Aaronic blessing supposed to be prayed over the people at the beginning of the day, the end of the day. It says, may the Lord make his countenance to shine upon you and be gracious to you and give you peace. There's peace and joy. This shining countenance isn't oily skin. We're talking about, you know, God's got a big smile. And I thought to myself, where has this been all my Christian life? Mm. How come I grew up with all these people and they're grouchy? You know, where's this joy? And then Jesus says that we should pray so that our joy might be full. I thought, well, I've been to prayer meetings, boy, and joyful is not the word I'd use for them. And so I really began to have to rethink my whole idea of what Christianity meant. And could Christianity mean that God is so glad to be with me that he'd actually smile and want me to be there with him? If I saw his face, he'd be glad to be with me. And then, you know, it started to really make a sense to me that, you know, if it was that way, that would really make me strong. You know, that would help me in the hard times. That would bring me around. You know, the flip side of that is I've seen a lot of pastors getting in trouble. People with ministries. One of my friends along the way had a ministry to 40,000 pastors.
Wow.
Internationally. Then one day he runs off with another woman that he was traveling with on his ministry trips. And he said afterwards, you know, she brings me more joy than all my ministry did.
Oh, boy.
You see, and every time I get a chance to do an up close look at these kind of crash and burn situations, and as a psychologist, I've seen way too many of them.
Yeah.
I find a guy who's let his joy run out, and all of a sudden he's been ministering, he's working, been doing a lot of stuff, but you know, there's no joy at home anymore. There's that smile is gone. They're just, you know, like existing. Mm-hmm. And somebody drifts along the path, and she or he smiles when they see him. And within a matter of weeks or months, they're going, I don't know how this took over my life. How is it that I can't resist this smile? And if you just think about all the other people that you know whose marriages and relationships got in trouble, it's because they never got back to joy. They let it drift out. They got into a low joy condition. And that makes us hugely vulnerable because the thing our brain desires more than anything else is that joy. Whoever smiles at us when we're in low joy is going to be able to take over our life. That's what bonding is about. We're built to bond to the people that smile at us. And so if we're not getting our smiles, we're not building our smiles. See, the wonderful thing about your brain is it doesn't care who started it. When I start building joy with you, if I started it or you smile, it doesn't matter. We both build joys together.
Okay.
So if I go home and I say, well, I'm going to start it, and I smile at my grandkids, and they smile at me, I smile at my wife, I smile at my dog, and the dog, you know, dogs can smile back too, you know.
Yes, they can. Absolutely they can.
You know, they wag themselves silly. Build joy every place you can. It amplifies, it builds it back up, it gives you strength, it strengthens your relationships, and I have yet to find a leader that went down in flames that was keeping the joy built in their lives. They
yes.
were always in a low joy condition when they
All right,
caught fire.
So Jim, I got a day break here. Time's just flying. But two big things. One is the word joy prior to me being exposed to you in your ministry was sort of a popular, pop psychology kind of try to be happy and smile a lot.
Yeah.
And that's not biblical joy. I mean, the verses you just rolled off the top of your head, if they don't mean what you say they mean, then the challenge is, okay, what do they mean then? All these key passages in Scripture and key biblical events where God is telling the dramatic story of his relationship with a free yet fallen people. And joy is such a critical part of that. If it doesn't mean what Dr. Wilder's saying it means, well, what does it mean then? And then add that, there's the theology side. Then add the latest brain research on the development of a healthy, psychologically, emotionally, intellectually, relationally human being and the role that joy plays in that. And then put them together. See, and you have that aha moment to where, wait a minute here. I've missed this. Joy in the Christian life is central. Joy in the human life is central. What am I doing to promote joy? How do I create joy? Are there things I can do to actually get joy? Create, exercise, and get joy? We come back. Dr. Jim Wilder will address that. The website is joytothrive.com. The number two, joytothrive.com, here on the Frank Pastore Show. All right, 99.5 KKLA FM Los Angeles, and Dr. Jim Wilder joins us, and I just love this stuff. It's taking biblical wisdom and all the theology and apologetics and worldview stuff that I know, and then combining that with what I'm now learning about neuroscience and brain chemistry, and you put them two together, and it's neurotheology. And that's really an interesting little niche that Dr. Wilder is become quite expert in. He is a clinical psychologist. He's been a Christian counselor since 1977, specializing in helping people deal with trauma and addiction and recovery in those. And he has found that joy is central to this whole thing. Not only in theology is joy central in God's relationship with us, but God invites us to participate in his joy as the three persons share in infinite joy. And we're invited by them to participate in that community. That's just amazing. And then when you fall and you make errors on this side, many times it's reducible to your joy tank being empty and losing your joy. So I want to know, how do you grow your joy? And how do I make sure my kids are growing in joy? And what are there exercises you can do to actually grow in joy? And so, Dr. Wilder, are there exercises you can do to grow in joy?
Well, yes, actually there are. Part of our Thrive training that we have developed is helping people to do these kind of joy interactions with each other. Clearly the easiest one to do is the one that happens spontaneously with your grandkids, and that is the smiling back and forth. But you can actually do that with everybody who will tolerate it in your community, you know. But one of the things we have to do is get ourselves sort of ready to start that, you see. If we were looking at joy and you'd been raised in joy, your nervous system would have sent joy as its normal. This like your thermostat. So every time you got out of normal, your brain would say, let's get back to joy. Well, so many of us have had our thermostat set somewhere over and close to afraid or worried or miserable or down or something like that, that every time we experience joy, we think something weird has happened and we go back to normal. But your brain is actually designed so that normal would be joyful. And so we got to reset our thermostat so that we start getting this joyful experience. Now, what happens if you don't have joy is that your brain begins to pump cortisol. Now, cortisol is your stress hormone, and it's actually a solvent for your central nervous system. It'll actually kill off the part of your brain that was growing most recently.
Yeah.
And it'll erase whatever happened during the day. So if you go to bed pumping cortisol, and all it takes is 6 minutes of fighting during the day, of being consistently upset, and your brain's going to pump cortisol for the next 24 hours, you got to go to bed with some sense of joy, or this stress is going to erase everything.
Whoa, slow down. Well, you did it again. Okay, wait. You got to go back.
Okay.
If you just have 6 minutes of high anxiety, stress, fight or flee kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
the brain is pumping the cortisol.
That's right.
For 24 hours?
Yeah, yeah. It's saying, hey, this was a bad day. I don't know what you were trying to do, but let's just forget it. Let's start over again. So it will, actually, cortisol will kill up to 25% of your brain cells and some of your memory circuits. They've done this study with airplane pilots that, fly from one time zone to another.
Yeah.
And just the stress of changing time zones makes their cortisol go up. The higher their cortisol goes up, the more brain cell death they have. It's just related to that kind of thing. And emotions are the main ways of stressing us. You know, we get upset. We don't get back to joy. We got to have something we can actually do to get us back to joy and set that as our normal. See, and so what I'm going to suggest to you is a real simple exercise for that. Easiest way to do it is to think of something that you really appreciate. Now, it's even better if you appreciate something relational, like your granddaughter's, was it granddaughter?
Grandson, Michael.
Grandson,
yeah,
grandson's
Michael.
Smile. If you think back on that, I mean, I'm looking at you right now, you're smiling just thinking about it.
Yeah,
you have
absolutely.
A sense of appreciation. I like that. I like to remember it. You can think about what it's like inside your body, and that's a little hint. The part of your brain that does joy is also the only part of your body that brain that can tell you what's going on inside your body.
Mm.
So you want to know your joy center is running or not? Simple test is, do I know what it feels like inside my body? How does it feel when you think about your grandson? Well, I feel warm inside. I feel, you know, I just, you know, I can feel my stomach, my shoulders relaxing, those kind of things. It doesn't really matter what your body is feeling. If you're noticing it, you're at least in your got the right part of your brain running. So,
is this introspection as well? Or is it only when it's dealing with my body part?
Well, introspection happens using some similar circuits, but this is just being aware of your body. So
okay. All right,
it's just a simple, quick and dirty test that'll save you thousands of dollars on brain scans each time. Yeah. Okay. So you think
so
about
if I can tap, yes, if
right.
I can tap into this, I'm in the right spot. If I can tap into what's going on inside my body right now.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Exactly right. So this afternoon I gave my dad a cup of hot chocolate, and when he was talking to me about that afterwards, I could see appreciation on his face. He's going, you know, that was really good. He thinks back about that. Or for me, I'm thinking about mangoes. I grew up in South America. I loved mangoes. You give me mangoes, I just think about those. I go, oh, that's good. That feeling like, oh, that's so good, you know? My daughter's got this new puppy, you know, he's a year and a half old, but, you know, he's just still puppy all over the place. And so Henry, she thinks of Henry and goes, ah, oh, that's so good. You know, that feeling is right there is appreciation. It's the beginning of joy. It's remembering the joy that you've stored. So what we want to do each day is, like, for 5 minutes when we first get up, we want to activate our joy for the day. So think about, before you get out of bed, well, what are the things I really appreciate? What are the good things, you know? And that's really a good way to enter into a relationship with God, too, because we're feeling appreciative. We can say, thank you. You know, I really appreciate mangoes. You know, you were having a good day the day you came up with mangoes, you know? Yeah, the Golden Retrievers was a good day. You know, the day this granddaughter or grandson came along, that was a good day. You really knew what you were doing. It just makes you smile, you know? In the middle of the day, you take 5 minutes and you say, well, let's think of the stuff I appreciate. You know, instead of eating your lunch just so fast that you don't know whether you ate it or not, you stop, and if you can appreciate lettuce, I mean, some people can.
Yes.
Right. Then you just say, oh, this is good lettuce. You know, it's crisp. And that sense of appreciation starts to put you back to remembering the joy you're carrying.
Okay, wait. I'm having another aha moment. Okay. So in all things, make your thankfulness known to God, right?
Someone ought to write that in a book.
And it's like, wait a minute. So joy and thankfulness are really close. When you said the appreciation thing,
mm-hmm.
If I'm thankful for something, I'm appreciating it. If I can be thankful in all things, even the challenges,
mm-hmm.
I'm approaching that challenge from a source of joy strength.
That's right. And the more joy we build, the easier it is to get back and find that spot. If we've had very little joy in our life, we just wander around trying to find it. But nowhere is it more important than just before you go to bed. If you go to bed in a joyful appreciation state, your body switches off the cortisol for that day. So it's a good
thing. Oh, really?
To save it. Yeah, that's what you can do to switch it off. Yeah, you got to get back to that appreciation state. You're going to save your brain. You're going to save your immune system. There's all these good things you're going to do for yourself. Someone ought to say something like, you shouldn't let the sun go down on your wrath. You know, you should really just settle that and get back to joy and appreciation by the end of every day, and you'll save your brain. And that's just, and it's really wise, you know?
Yes. No, no, Jim, this is, I'm not appreciating the fact that we're out of time. I can't wait to have you back, and I know people are loving this as well. So folks, look, the portal through which you can access this is joy2thrive.com. Joy, the number two, thrive.com. And again, I imagine a lot of you are hearing this stuff for the first time, and it makes so much sense. Again, check it out at joy2thrive.com. My guest, Dr. Jim Wilder, bunch of books, bunch of DVDs, bunch of resources, bunch of YouTube video, bunch of stuff's out there. And I'll tell you what, it will change your life. It is a Kuhnian paradigm shift. Hey, thanks for listening to the Frank Pastore Show today here on 99.5 KKLA FM Los Angeles.